Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Vick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Vick.
We're back, and I won't go into it now, but coming from Aaron Yagoda, part of the answer about the breeding of Bandbox, and he said it was either Tappet's first or second year, and he thought that he was going to be a productive sire before anything really had happened, and he was a bargain. Perceived as a bargain, and that the mare herself, that Empty the Bases, who got Bandbox, she actually was rejected. She was put in. He was trying to get her covered by somebody else, and the farm said no. She's got no pedigree. She's not. We don't want. We can't let you breed to whoever the sire was. I'm not going to press to see who. So he breeds to Tappet instead, and he ends up with the wonderful Bandbox. Pretty funny. And he said, boy, sadly, he also says that he bred a similar mare to Tappet. Or did he say, let me see, bred her back to Tappet? And no, another, same year, he said he bred another mare to Tappet, and the mare was hit by lightning in the field and killed. Unbelievable. I tell you, it'll test your, this game will test your mettle like nothing else. Unbelievable. I hear Bill Downs in the background. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
You know what tests your mettle in Shelbyville is the weather.
Yeah. Wow. I keep on telling people don't want to listen to me, but I'm telling you, the wettest month in Indianapolis, just say Indianapolis, even though we're in Shelbyville, is our May and June, and we're right in it right now. So this is what happens. If you get real bored, just hit Indianapolis precipitation totals, and you'd be like, whoa, look at that.
Pretty funny. Well, you're off the turf today, and when it comes to the pick five, there's a second level allowance. The fifth race comes off, and so does the seventh, which is a first level allowance going short. The fifth race is going long. And as part of the pick five today, we got the two stakes. We got the two Indiana bred stakes, the William Henry Harrison and the Shelby County, and they're good. We'll talk about them in a minute, but let's get kind of caught up with you. Last week Belmont week, so we didn't talk. How's the last couple of weeks gone?
Yeah, you know, we've been stuck in this wet weather, so it's a lot of the interesting races have been hurt by scratches, so. It's just been one of those things. I know next week, I guess, how about we do a preview as opposed to a review? Next week, on the Monday card, there's a couple of really nice horses that are on the card. The undefeated Karimba for Wesley Ward, who will be worried about, Royal Ascot later in the week. But
that's right.
This is an undefeated filly who all three races at Indiana Grand at the 5 furlongs on the turf, and she gets I forgot that she's an Indiana bred, so she gets to face Indiana bred for the first time, and I just think that she's going to win some stakes races down the road, and they're just being very patient with her, which is great to see. And I made her 1-5, so I mean, she is an absolute, I want to say, a slam dunk, because there is a fast filly in there, Ever Wonder, who, even though she's 0-1 on turf, the only time she ran on turf was a route race. So this is the first time for Ever Wonder, who's a very speedy mare in her own right, to match up with someone like Karimba. Now, Karimba showed another dimension last time out. She didn't have to have the lead, and she still drew away to win rather easily. But she's a really interesting runner. And then there's, I know it's earlier in the card, there is an allowance race, I believe. Yeah, the allowance race is really strong. Brett Cox has got a filly, quality road filly, Slick Back. Outlier is the favorite. That's a really fun race. Dale Romans even has a horse that's going to be here at Indiana Grand. He doesn't run too many. And then I was shuffling my papers. I remember there's one other one. Euphoric, who was second in the Miss Preakness Stakes, had Pimlico on May 14th.
Wow.
She's entered against, looks like some older fillies and mares in a 6-furlong allowance race, and made her 3-5. She's going to be, Florent Giroux is named to ride, so I think they're serious about running. I don't think this is just a phantom entry or anything like that. And it's not like it's a free bingo spot. Gray Owl, who ran last time out at Indiana Grand, who will be the two horse on Monday in that second race, she lost to them in the midst of Biz, who was a graded stakes winner in her own right.
Yes.
So she gave her a really good run for her money. So Euphoric will have to be game, but she'll be the odds-on favorite. So even though there's some, they're big favorites and all that, there are a couple of really, I don't want to say headliners, but definitely a couple of really nice fillies are going to be running at Indiana Grand on Monday.
Very nice. And, we're into a nice steady beat, too, kind of looking back at the last few weeks. Kind of leaned on the Indiana breds at the beginning of the meet, and now a very nice mix, good mix of, open company action, including maiden specials and, these allowances that you're hinting at, and just looking at the last couple of days, the multi sequences, particularly the pick five, which we always look at, they've been a little chalky, but you're going to get that. That's going to happen. Today we've got the two stakes, and I see that the changes are up, and let me pull that as well as we talk, Bill, and see how impacted not bad, actually. You got three came out of the seventh, and only two came out of the fifth.
Yep, in that fifth race, the two that came out, probably two of the best, in Sharp Prospect and Alfalfa. But, there are a couple of horses that are really, that were not too unhappy, that our
right.
connections were not too unhappy that the race came off the turf, and probably the most happy would be Cyprian Contreras, who trains the eight-horse Aztec Empire, who ran against a paceless race on May the 12th and just sat right off of it and just took over, and it was done. And now steps up one class level. But, you know, I probably is my pick now since he won against the you know, he's more of a closer than he is a stalker, and he was able to stalk and just crush in that race. Cash Logistics, Indiana bred, was a winner last time out against Open Company. Defeated Blue Ridge Mountain. It was a good race, but I was more impressed with Aztec Empire's race than I was with Cash Logistics. And then Home Run Trick on the outside is the main track only horse. Don't look at the turf race last time out. He set a pretty fast pace at Oaklawn. Yes, it was a pretty bad fade, but I don't think I'll have to go as quick. But he does draw an outside post, and even though there's a couple scratches to his inside, still the outside. So we'll see how he negotiates that. And I think the pace will be legit, more legit than what Aztec Empire dealt with on May the 12th. But for me, it's Aztec Empire, the 8th, and then followed by probably Cash Logistics in that 5th race.
Well, and to be honest, the race is much tougher as an off the turf than it was. You know, this doesn't happen all that much. It's much tougher off the turf than it was on the turf, because even a horse like Peruvian Boy, Nacho Correas, he's got races that fit in here, Bill. That win two back is competitive, sure, in this group.
But his question mark, I guess, is probably the route of ground, and he's not really known as a route horse. But if you can ignore the last race, certainly his race before that was not too shabby at all.
No.
And it's also a good sign that Castanon stays aboard. So, you know, there's some things to like about him. I wouldn't argue with you.
And since Alfalfa comes out, I guess the other speed is Home Run Trick. The MTO will be up on the lead. But Peruvian Boy, you know, as a sprinter, as a authentic sprinter, yeah, this is I I think this is tougher. It's tougher off the turf than it was as a turf race. Let's talk about the first of the stakes, the Shelby County. We're very familiar with a lot of these fillies and mares. This is a good group.
Yeah, Expect Indy, who was third in this race in 2020 and won the stakes race in 2019, and made us a favorite at 5-2. But comes off of a very long layoff, and her last race was nothing great at all, last at Laurel in mid-January, but a lot of time in between that race and this race, and we know that she loves Indiana Grand, and it's just a matter of getting up in age a little bit. At the age of 8, can she still stay at a high enough level to win a race like the Shelby County Stakes? Then you got the new kid on the block, if you will, Hungarian Princess, a 3-year-old filly trying to beat older fillies and mares for the first time, and racing against them for the first time. She won the Swifty Sired Stakes. She beat a filly by the name of Pearl Tiara, came back to an entry-level allowance at Indiana Grand on June the 7th. But this is an incredibly more difficult race than the Swifty Sired Stakes. She has plenty of talent, but she's going to have to run her best race, I think, if she wants to win this race. Shy Money is undefeated in sprint races, been going up the class ladder. Aaron West decides to throw her in against stakes horses for the very first time. She's got a fighting chance as well. And then some other familiar names from last year, Fireball Babies running off the long layoff. I always thought she's better going along, but they're putting her in a sprint race. She was fifth in this race last year. Pretty Assets, who won this race last year, and who has not won since the Shelby County Stakes in 2020. She's back defending her crown in here. She's a deep closer. And those are probably the and Sentimental Journey, who's not bad. You take a look at her form. She has a lot of races where she goes around a ground, and she doesn't do very well. But all three of her wins have been going short. I don't think she's good enough to win against this group, but she might be one to throw underneath in the exotics for trainer Tom Amos and owner Maggie Moss.
Nice. Sentimental Journey from the rail. And you know, the last, I'm just looking, the last, when was the last stake win? Our friend Andy Berg, the Gumster Stable, expected the, yeah, it was the Richmond last year when was the last time this veteran mare won. And she, boy, 19 for 27 in the money bill at mm-hmm. Indy. She's been terrific for Andy. Turn to the third leg of the Pick Five. Bill Downs with us as we look ahead to Indiana Grand's action today. 1:15 start off the turf. Be aware, this one was going to be a 5 furlong turf dash, and you can take out the 1, 2, and the 5. No MTOs had been entered in this. This is a first level allowance. 18,000 optional claimer.
Yeah, and I think this race is going to be chalky. Short Summer Dress, who just comes off a smashing win as a gigantic favorite, one as tons the best, wrapped up as the comment line said. That was a 25, now wins a 2, now steps up into this first level allowance optional claiming, drawn beautifully to the outside. You know, she's the one to beat. Thaleston Lassie has form on turf and dirt, but the dirt races, 2 and 3 back at Oaklawn, one of which came on and off track, has speed going 5 furlongs. So that's going to put her right in the mix. And then Sisters Ghost, who just won in a race that came off the turf against Maidens. Yeah, it was against Maidens, and this is a big step up. But she certainly gets the same distance again, just up against winners for the first time. She's got a chance as well, even though I probably would put her as my third choice. For me, it's Short Summer Dress and Bailston Lassie, and then everything else would be a surprise for me.
I should just at least mention Stolen Beauty from Steve Lister, because last seen winning at 4.5, and just kind of wonder, also a horse that's 2 for 2 on less than fast track going. So don't know how wet it'll be by 5:30.
That's the question mark, Steve.
Yeah.
Like yesterday we got hit with like 1.5 inches of rain, and this time around, I think we just got hit with a spattering. So, whatever that means, but I'm sure we'll start off with an off track, but you know, it's warm, and as long as we don't get hit with any more rain, there's a possibility that this track might hit good by that time. But until I actually see the track itself when I get to the races, I can kind of figure out and come up with a better idea how much the track might potentially dry out.
Gets us to the fourth leg and the William Henry Harrison, and I did see where Marcus Hirsch was, I think, wanted to take a shot against the favorite in here. You can also scratch, I think, what, Sky Judge came out? Yes.
Yeah.
Scratch the 6, Sky Judge.
Yep, and Double Tough trying to go back-to-back-to-back in this William Henry Harrison Stakes, and coming off the long layoff again like he did in 2020 and won this race. Not as the favorite, but as a second or third choice. He just like expect Indy, getting up there, 8 years old. We'll have to deal with some of the speed of That's What I Thought, who was second in this race last year behind Double Tough, and he's also coming off the layoff. And so, we got long layoffs all over the place. Unbridled Beast, another one off the long layoff, more known for being a router, even though he does have a win in a sprint race, a couple wins in sprints early on in his career. He's interesting. And then the one I'm kind of most intrigued by is Red Skies and Night for Brad Cox for Bad Boy Racing. Another one coming off the long layoff. First time going a sprint distance, and that's kind of unusual when you're a four-year-old, and Red Skies at Night. Kind of was a horse that eluded me a lot. I think a swerve on him you know, not be on him when he wins, and then I was on him when he wouldn't win. So I always thought he had talent, and it's interesting. I think he's going to get a great pace to run at in here. You got Maters and Taters, and that's what I thought, and Double Tough, who won't be far off the pace. And he might get a good setup in here from off the pace. So Red Sky's a nice one that I probably would throw in there in the William Henry Harrison Stakes as race eight.
Well, and Brad was with us yesterday to celebrate the Belmont Stakes win, and I brought up Red Skies at Night, and and he thought he expected a big effort, first time 4-year old in this spot. So I think you sniffed one out. Gets us to the nightcap, and here's Indiana Breds looking to graduate. They're going to go three quarters, and we also had scratches out of here. The 2, 4, 6, as well as the AEs, the 13 and 14, but it still leaves you with 9 to choose from.
I know I should call this the Steve Bick handicap because I know who you like, Steve.
Hold on. Well, if I'm going to go back to Shakonahay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We talked about this on May 19th.
That's right.
He get off to a good start. He certainly got bumped at the break, but he showed some late interest. And if you liked him on May 19th, you got to throw him in again in today's race. Even though I'm not a big fan of the rail going 6 furlongs, but this is such a wide open race, Steve. It's even with the scratch of Strong Words, who was the tepid favorite at 7-2, if I remember correctly. You got Presto Beach, first start of the gelding for Chris Hartman. First time against Indiana Breds, been at Los Al, Santa Anita, Oaklawn Park. Hasn't done very much, especially the last couple, so they decided to geld him. And been training down at Churchill for his return to the races. So if he's going to show that he can run a little bit, tonight might be the time that he does that. After that, another one that had some trouble at the start in his career debut was Sacred Sky, the 7. Hopped at the start, and then the inside horse came out on him with my notes. But that was actually a pretty good race, that race in April 28th. The winner came back to win next time out. The fourth place horse, Actuality, came back to win not too long ago, a maiden race at Indiana Grand going long for Mike Maker. And so you got second start. You had some trouble at the break. Blinkers on. Tim Eggleston does a better job. You know, doesn't have the best stats in the world, but when he has a runner, he can get the job done. And so we'll see with Sacred Sky. And also, Deshaun Parker, I just saw that as well. He's aboard for the first time. Not that Prescott did anything wrong in that race on April 28th, but you get Deshaun Parker as well. So those are probably a couple of the horses. This is a race that, gosh, if you have the budget, it's, I don't want to say an all race because there's a couple I could probably throw out, but I would certainly have coverage, let's just put it that way, as in that ninth race, including Steve Shakonahay.
Shakonahay. I like it. Bill, great to get going again, and the summer season now starting to settle in, and let's get out of this, let's get out of the wet season, and good luck today, and close out the week tomorrow, and back at it next week.
Sounds good, Steve.
I appreciate it. Bill Downs, everybody. Follow Bill on Twitter, Bill Downs 1, plus IG Racecourse, and the whole team, Nancy and Rachel. And first card, I didn't look at other than some passing glances and some results last week with the focus on Belmont. I didn't really get a chance to see what went on last week. So back into the swing of things here at Indiana Grand. And of course, next week we'll come back and we got to get back into Canterbury as well. All right. So we'll worry about that. Next week it'll be Canterbury and Ascot. Two very, very similar race meets. Cause they call Canterbury the Ascot of Minnesota. I got to tell you about the before. I'll save this for Seth Marrow next. You had about half that field come out of the Obeah at Delaware. We knew three or four that had already run. Obviously, were going to come out, but you end up with still a nice field of seven. So we'll discuss that with Seth after we visit with Jay Pridman. The Daily Racing Forum joins us. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Jay, this is the. You know, the visit that I always make the same reference. This is like the scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they seal up the Ark and they put it up on the shelf. This is the sealing of the Triple Crown season after Saturday's Belmonte.
I'm glad we're doing it in June instead of October this year.
Point well made. It's been an unusual 5 weeks, but a little bit. What'd you think of Saturday?
I mean, it was a great card overall. It's just such a Breeders' Cup quality card, and you know, the Belmont was a great way to end the series. You saw two horses who ran their butts off. And it was really gratifying that they were the top two from the Breeders' Cup Juvenile to see that form hold up all these months later. And it was just a really exciting race with the, you know, essential quality, getting the best of Hot Rod Charlie and well back to the Preakness winner in third. So I thought it was a satisfying end to the series.
I think I used that word myself, too, in recapping it Saturday evening on Sirius XM. And, you know, I know, you know, some people are going to linger on the difficulties post-Derby. But to have the Derby favorite, Jay, you know, regroup and come back and win this race and you know, more or less flexes muscles a little bit. You know, Brad Cox's first victory in a Triple Crown race, and how about the Luis Saez story? You know, he gets his elusive victory in a classic.
Right after the Derby DQ from 2 years ago. With Maximum Security. So, and that was obviously a terrific thing for Saez, who's just, you know, become one of the best riders in the country over the last couple of years. And that was, you know, that was a big win for him. You know, but also going back to the central quality, you know, he'd run a terrific race in the Kentucky Derby. You know, even though Rock Your World was more compromised by their bumping, it certainly impacted essential quality. And, you know, he's wide, and it's been obviously well chronicled how much ground he lost compared to the horses who finished in front of him. And, you know, that's still the only loss of his career. And he ran a good race that day. So to see him continue with the kind of form that he's had is you know, really shows what a good colt he is, because he's was precocious enough to win, you know, around one turn first time out and go on to win the Breeders' Cup last year, and his form has held up and then some this year.
Well, it clearly reestablishes essential quality, I would think. I mean, we other things I want you to talk about in the race, but certainly as we look toward the second half, essential quality, you know, puts himself back up on the point.
No, he's the leader in the clubhouse right now. That's for sure. You know, to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. And, you know, three horses finished in front of him in the Derby, but he certainly ran a good race. And, you know, he's won everything else he's done this year, including a classic with a giant buyer speed figure over a worthy rival in Hot Rod Charlie. And like I said, the Preakness winner was 11 plus lengths back from them. So it was a legit race and then some.
Well, and you mentioned Hot Rod Charlie, and this is a race that in one way or another continues to elude Doug O'Neill, you know, that was you know, one of those races that you look back kind of probably and as a trainer, and you wince and you think, gosh, you know, my horse could not have run better and just got simply run down.
Exactly. Yeah, he ran a winning race. In most years in the Belmont Stakes, that performance
exactly
would have won. Just essential quality was a little bit better on the day. But it was a great performance by Hot Rod Charlie, even factoring the pace and where the horses closest to him early finished. It was a giant race on his part. He did everything but win. And I really like how he was pretty stubborn when Essential Quality first tried to get by him in upper stretch. It really wasn't until the last 70 yards or so where Essential Quality started to, you know, ease away from him and win by a little over a length. It was a terrific performance on Hot Rod Charlie's part.
Before we talk about what lies ahead, for people that haven't seen Jay's recap, the last of the classic season summaries, the expanded chart comment style, anything from back down the chart that you take away from this race?
Not really. I thought, Rombauer was sitting in a good spot. Maybe coming back on 3 weeks was a little brief for him. But it wasn't, he didn't run a bad race. Just the two horses in front of him ran out of their mind. He obviously had good rest coming into the Preakness. And maybe he just needs a little more time to run his absolute best race. But he ran a good enough race that day. So that part of it was... was encouraging. I've never understood all the love for Known Agenda. I didn't really get it going into the Kentucky Derby, and I didn't get it going into the Belmont. I thought his Florida Derby was, a decent enough race against a field that has not proven to be very strong, and I was against him. I didn't pick him in the top four in the Derby, and I didn't pick him in the top four in the Belmont. He kind of loomed up on the turn like he was going to follow Essential Quality, and he made about an eighth of a mile run and then just sort of ran evenly the rest of the way. Maybe he's going to be better down the line, but to me, that horse's reputation has exceeded his accomplishments to this point, in my opinion. And then, the rest were just, not good enough. Rocky World, I think, needs to go back to the grass. There's one dirt win was accomplished under optimum circumstances. He got loose on the lead over a track that nobody was passing anybody on if you had inside speed that day. And while I thought he'd run a lot better in the Belmont Stakes because I envisioned him getting kind of a front-running trip, he couldn't go with, or he tried to go with Hot Rod Charlie and couldn't. And I think they're going to have to just sort of regroup with him. And there's a really good series of grass races at Del Mar during the summer for three-year-olds, and prior grass races are obviously quite good, and I think that's probably what his future is going to end up being. So those are some of the thoughts on the ones that were farther down the line in the race.
Absolute. And we'll see. I had a question. Somebody asked, who was my friend Darren asked, what would you do with Burbanek? He said now at this point, so. Got to figure out a map for him as well.
I've said it repeatedly here and in the racing forum. Anything coming out of the Wood Memorial is a toss for me until proven otherwise. They were in the Derby. They were in this race. They're just they were in the Preakness, and they've. Overall, all of them have shown that just wasn't a good race. And so I think Burbanek was very fortunate to get a win in the Wood Memorial. I think he's going to have to shoot for, sort of the lesser derbies to have any success going forward.
Jay, and again, before we talk about, what's on the schedule and how the three-year-olds shape up and any new faces that came in. Let's touch on anything else from the weekend racing-wise, and I suppose on the three-year-old front, could probably touch on the Woody Stevens result, too. How about Nick Cassata getting a grade one that he... with a horse that he bred. I quipped on Twitter that he's had success at the highest level in the game in every possible variety now. Horse player, jock agent, breeder owner.
No, it was a terrific win for him. I was very happy for him. I've known him a long time. And he, you know, the other aspect of that horse is that, you know, he and everybody involved with that horse were soberly realistic coming out of the Fountain of Youth as to what they had. And instead of trying to, you know, go down a path that was, you know, might not have worked by trying to make him into a Derby horse and potentially ruining him, they said, no, you know, we're going to keep him around one turn, and that's what he is. And they've been rewarded for that foresight. And you know, the race the other day, I thought tactically, it was a smart race tactically in terms of how they strategized and how Jose Ortiz ended up riding the horse, you know, to really kind of take it to Jackie's Warrior early and make Jackie's Warrior have to, you know, come up the inside like that. I thought it was a really, good, just the way that horse has been managed has been really, really, really smart.
And you know, juxtaposed against some in the crop that that certainly you've cited as being campaigned quizzically and strangely and you know, not playing to strengths. This is really, I'm glad you pointed that out. It's a perfect example of what you can do, and you know, not stopping at every street corner, to picking
right,
a spot.
Just to be more specific, Steve, since you're alluding to it, I'll say it. Compare and contrast Drain the Clock with Sitting on Go.
Yeah. Yep. Yes. Other takeaways from Saturday? Who else impressed you?
You know, Domestic Spending's race was sensational.
Yep.
Just the turn of foot that he has. It's hard to believe he actually lost once. You know, he's really established himself as the best draft horse in the country. And I really was impressed by the race that he ran the other day. You know, the Just a Game was a fun race to watch with the Appleby Phillies running 1-2 and Mike Smith just, you know, coming up the rail like that. So that was a fun race. Just, I mean, that whole card is great. It was unfortunate there were a couple of key scratches out of the Ogden Phipps, but takes nothing away from what Latruska accomplished and is continuing to accomplish this year as she establishes herself right now as the top one in that division, you know, even allowing for Swiss Skydiver and Monomoy Girl. She's won the bigger races right now with the Apple Blossom and Ogden Phipps. I give a shout out. I'm just glad to see Flavian Pratt continue to get, you know, notice across the nation now for the rides that people have seen him put up on, you know, Derby Day and Derby Weekend, now Belmont Weekend with, you know, Domestic Spending, obviously, but also he gave Hot Rod Charlie every possible chance he could to win the race. And I think people have come to realize that he stacks up as well as anybody in the country. He's just a terrific rider.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I imagine that, you know, there's a few eastern half of the country outfits that, you know, might continue to, you know, to reach out to him for big race opportunities. I wonder how much. I mean, obviously he's going to come home and finish up at Santa Anita. Then you got the little brief Los Al action, and then Del Mar, of course. But you know, there's big races. I think about something like the Stars and Stripes weekend, Jay, and I imagine Chad or, you know, any number of people that might be ringing up.
Well, I think that's where Domestic Spending is supposed to go, right? To the race they're now calling the Mr. D that used to be the Arlington Million. So, yeah, I would think he'd end up going there that weekend, and I'm sure there'll be some opportunities at Saratoga where he's going to come in. And ride. He's as good as you can get, in my opinion.
Well, and just an entertaining way to close out the Triple Crown season. And at the same time, Jay, even Brad Cox with me yesterday, as we projected, you know, the early portion of the summer for Essential Quality, even he, you could tell, is eager to match up against Medina Spirit in the Haskell with Essential Quality. That was the suggestion. What set the stage for us for what lies ahead, you're thinking, the next few months?
Regarding?
The three-year-old scene.
Well, I mean, obviously Essential Quality is the leader in the clubhouse. I'm not sure he's going to the Haskell. I think Mandaloon is supposed to go there after he runs.
Yeah, that I said you're right. I said Central,
right.
But it was Mandaloon.
Go to the Jim Dandy and then the Travers.
Right.
You know, I would think, you know, Medina Spirit is the Haskell makes the most sense for him. But a lot of things are going to be predicated on what the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission decides regarding the Kentucky Derby in terms of, you know, penalties that are meted out. I mean, it's obvious the horse will be disqualified based on the rules, and the rules as written call for the trainer to be suspended for 30 days, according to the way the rules are written right now. So whenever that gets adjudicated, that'll go into play, and then we'll be subject to whatever inevitable legal wranglings there are related to that. So, you know, what that means in terms of Medina Spirit's campaign, you know, your guess is as good as mine. But I would think that the Haskell, as of today, barring any, you know, hiccups, that's where he would end up going. But to think that there's not going to be any hiccups between now and Haskell Day, I think is naive. So it's just hard to, you know, say with specificity how that's all going to play out. And then you've got, you know, some of the horses that were bigger deals early on that went to the sidelines and might come back, you know, most notably Life is Good, who's training at Keeneland right now. And Dave Grenning spoke to Elliot Walden the other day and said that, you know, they're just getting him ready, and he hadn't really committed yet to what kind of campaign he'd have or even where he'd end up going, you know, once he's ready to go. So there, that's, you know, that all remains to be seen. So there's a lot that's pretty clear in terms of campaigns, especially for the Brad Cox horses, but there's still a lot of things that are up in the air. One of the interesting things, Steve, that I think could happen here regarding the three-year-olds, you know, when you look at the Belmont and the fig that Essential Quality, Buyer Fig of 109 and Hot Rod Charlie 108, you know, those are numbers that are right up there with the best of the older horses right now. And I really think this year, especially here in California, the Pacific Classic is a very intriguing race for a horse like Hot Rod Charlie. You know, mile and a quarter, which obviously he can handle, against older horses that right now out here, the best of whom are Country Grammar and Royal Ship, and you get weight from them being a three-year-old against older. And the Breeders' Cup is at Del Mar this year at a mile and a quarter, and I just think that, you know, I don't know if they're going to end up sending Hot Rod Charlie back east or not, but I think the Pacific Classic is a very viable option for that horse.
Do we have any late arrivers, Jay? Or I keep bringing up Following C, and you know, some of the, they feel like sprint types that, you know, are going to look for the, you know, toward the Alan Jerkins. Anybody that's kind of lurking to try to transition into, you know, into the, shoulder their way into the three-year-old scene?
Yeah, I mean, nobody that's, I think, of that quality. I mean, obviously, yeah. If a horse like Following C, for instance, if he could stretch out, he, you know, he's got that kind of upside. But, you know, I'm with you. I think right now he's more of a Jerkins kind of horse. I don't know that, you know, or maybe he's good enough to, you know, to go on to, you know, something like the Jim Dandy. And if he runs well there, then you take your shot in the Travers. But I'm not sure that that's, you know, we're as lightly raced as he is, you know, and what he's accomplished to this date, I don't know that they want to fast track him to something that ambitious at the moment. He seems like he's more of a, I agree with you, I think he's more of a, you know, over the, if you're looking at the time horizon over the next 2 months, I think, you know, 7/8 grade one is a more attainable goal than mile and a quarter grade one.
Well, and there's the pair of West Point runners, first captain who came back with the allowance, the exciting allowance win, and we'll see what they do, what Shug does there. And I guess Flightline has not worked back. Although when Sadler was asked, I think he said that he was okay and there wasn't any issue. There's horses like that. Mahamel showed up. The Pletcher.
Right.
Shadwell, it's going to be a fun second half, Jay. And I know people for whatever reason were kind of ambivalent about things earlier in the spring, but we come out of the classic season better than we went into it.
No, it was a good all three races were exciting to watch. The last two were obviously more satisfying owing to what happened the week after the Derby. Rumbauer's win was terrific for Michael McCarthy and the connections and how they campaigned that horse. And then, like we were talking earlier, that Belmont was just a great way to end the series.
Well, we look forward to summer. Belmont wraps up and everybody starts thinking about Saratoga already, even with quite a bit of racing left downstate. And of course, for you, home game is looming.
I'll be looking forward to Del Mar. Yes, that'll be a good time of year.
Jay, I appreciate it, and thanks all winter long, marching through the terrific coverage and everything that went into the 2021 Triple Crown season. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman. Your Triple Crown season in the books. About 20 minutes to fill out. And Seth Merrow. Seth, I'm sure, was disappointed with me. Because I couldn't do his show on Sunday after Belmont. And we went to the zoo. We went to the Bronx Zoo. And it just the timing, he's on 10 that what has he got, Racing Across America, 10 to 11. So we couldn't do it because we were picking up Spencer and his roommates, and off we went to the Bronx. The zoo was great fun, and actually, considering how hot it was, we were able to see virtually everything. I think the only thing we didn't see were the tigers were hiding. They were somewhere lounging in the shade, but other than that, we saw every possible, and there was surprisingly so, considering that it was a hot summery day, and sometimes they the animals, they're not they're kind of laid low. Even the snow leopard, I mean, of all things, the snow leopard was out there prowling around. The lions were, they were sitting, and they were actually in the shade, but you could see them easily. Things like the gazelles and the zebras and that sort, they were just grazing, so they were comfortable in the heat. Seth Merrow joins us from Capital OTB. Seth, I'm explaining why I had to beg off on Sunday from visiting with you.
Fully understandable. You were taking a little tourist time at one of the great tourist sites of New York City.
It is.
What was the best animal? What was the most exciting animal?
Ooh, gosh. Let me go through their...
Lions? Did you see lions?
There were lions. The lions were sitting kind of, they were sitting... Oh, I tell you who were great. Of all things, the grizzly bears, the black bears, they were really animated. And there were two of them in their little pool. They got a pool that comes trickling down, the water comes down the rocks, and it creates a wading pool. And there was one that was particularly funny and enjoying himself. the sea lions. I love the sea lions and the otters and that, you know, right on the main. I mean, when I was a kid, the whole Bronx Zoo was that main corridor right there behind the big fountain. When you drive in, there were only like half a dozen buildings and a few other outlying cages. I mean, I've been going to the zoo since I was, I mean, my God, since probably about 1963 or four. So it is just, you know, become remarkable since then. What else did we see that was good that you'd like? The gorilla, there was a very good gorilla. It was a very good, I put pictures up on the Facebook page. In fact, let me look at the picture. I love birds, so the birdhouse was great, including a terrific toucan. Let me see here. What else I got? There's some monkeys. There were some very cute monkeys that were having fun. Flamingos. They're just nice to look at.
Bronx. It's we're winding down and maybe returning to normalcy. What were the rules, and was there a big crowd?
You had to put, the crowd was, yeah, there was a big crowd. They did have a limit on capacity, and you had to book your arrival time. They locked you into half hour or 20 minute, whatever they were, intervals. We had to be there between, I think, noon and 12:20 was our arrival time. So by the time we got the kids in Brooklyn and then drove over, you had to put on masks in the enclosures in if you went indoors. Yeah. And anything kind of undercover, but otherwise no masks, and there was a great crowd. I mean, you know what's amazing about the Bronx Zoo is how it's a big, diverse, international. I mean, just you hear countless languages, and you see apparel of international heritage, and it is a melting pot. Visit, much like Statue of Liberty, and I guess a lot of the New York landmarks. We've gone. This is about probably the third or fourth time we've gone after a Belmont Saturday.
Yeah, a tradition in its own.
Yeah, and more about every 3 years, it seems like we've gone. And one of Spencer's roommates, Anya, who's from France, she had never been, so she was very eager to see the zoo. It was on her list of New York must-sees.
Well, people do toss around the word iconic a little too much, but I think the zoo is an iconic tourist destination in New York City.
Oh, no, Bronx Zoo can't be beat. And Central Park Zoo is a nice little zoo for those of you, if you can't get to the Bronx Zoo. And Bronx Zoo takes, you better be ready for a 4 or 5 hour expedition. You're going to hoof it, it's over hill and dale. I've got to do. We've been to the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens, have not been to the main botanical garden, which is right, essentially across the, across the Bronx River Parkway is right there. And I've also never been up to the cloisters. I'd like to hit that. 60 years old, and I've never been to either one of those.
I've never been to either one of those either, but I have my number of visits to New York City is fairly limited overall.
You? It took you until a couple of years ago to get to Belmont. The cloisters, yeah. Seth at the cloisters. We'll look forward to that. They'll be pushing you around in a wheelchair.
I always was able to say I visited Albuquerque Downs before I got to Belmont.
It's
unbelievable.
Derby Lane.
Belmont and pandemic and whatnot, you've now been to all three venues, Derby, Preakness, and Belmont, with their, winding out of the pandemic rules. Any thoughts on how the tracks compared or contrasted, or how those rules may lead into the summer?
Not really. The atmosphere around all three was actually very similar. I mean, Derby was like, Derby Junior. It was as close to regular as you're going to get. I mean, without the other than the no infield, it was Derby, you know, like you'd expect it. You know, Preakness was kind of quiet, and this was relatively quiet, but it's just nice to have bodies around, you know, and have have corridors filled, and, you know, the Belmont Cafe was filled, and you know, the ante room, you know, behind where I broadcast that part of the clubhouse, those tables, that had a nice, robust crowd. It was, you know, it was good, that part. I mean, I don't think, Seth, you know, what we're going to have at Saratoga is going to be, you know, it's going to be full throttle Saratoga crowds, I think, on a daily basis.
Yeah, you know, obviously people recognize you from TV around town and whatnot. And
yeah, you're Seth Merrill. The face of GoTV.
I always tell people, hey, you're on OTV. Oh, you're like a celebrity, somebody will say it jokingly. And I'll say, yeah, like three rungs below the local weatherman. That's my level of celebrity.
No, I would say you're ahead of most weathermen. There might be one weatherman that, I guess, I don't watch the Albany weather, but I suppose there's one weatherman that, you know, Steve Caparizzo. Caparizzo. Right?
Yeah. Come on. He's got the pet connection going for him.
All right. So he's, all right. So you come in right behind Steve Caparizzo.
But over the past, you know, month and a half, I get asked 12 times a week, what do you think's going to happen up at the track? And as we've been getting closer over the past couple of weeks, and I came out with the revised near full capacity rules, I think it's going to be. If you're vaccinated, there will be a delineation, I think. But if you're vaccinated, I think it's going to be pretty much close to normal, it seems like.
Yeah. And the excitement is people downstate that's all they wanted to talk about. I mean, they were more excited about looking ahead to Saratoga than they were being at you know, Belmont Festival 3 days. It was very strange. I mean, everybody always, at this time of year, they always say, oh, you know, I'm going to come up. But I got people asking me for hotels and timing and where do we go and what, you know, left and right. And where, you know, where can we see Seth? Where can we buy Seth a drink? That I get that question asked more than any other.
You know all the spots.
Well, not when it comes to the elbow lifting. I'm retired. But the, you know, Gaffney's.
Well, you know all the spots where I frequent because
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, after the track, maybe a Horseshoe or Ciro's in downtown. I'm at Desperate Annie's usually.
Desperate Annie's. You might see him at Gaffney's and at One Caroline too, right?
I bounce around a little bit. Yeah, no question about during the summertime. Desperate Annie's. And frankly, I haven't been downtown over the past year much at all, just because my whole thing is I go down and you know, kind of mingle around and walk in places and look for people, you know, and then you'll stop. Over the past year, there was no mingling around. There was no kind of like, oh, let me just walk through this place and see who's here. The rules have been, you know, kind of go in, sit down, no standing up at all. So I have not frequented downtown too much over the past year.
Well, then you're in for a treat, I imagine, that everybody's going to be. You know where I started, where the end of my drinking days. You know where I ended up very regularly was Clancy's. I ended up really enjoying Clancy's.
I have only been kind of a Clancy's occasional person over the past couple of years. I don't know whether I'd been in that at all before 2 or 3 years ago, and a couple of people I knew were kind of regulars there, so I went in a few times. But other than that, that was not a regular place for me.
No, if you're,
you know, you talk about chasing Skidmore women back in the day. So I'm curious if you hit like Barclays. That was the place.
Barclays,
the former bank that still had kind of the marble countertop as the bar. That was one of my regulars back then.
Well, and for late night for dancing, you had Newbury's, right? Newbury's was hot.
Or you could go out by the lake.
Rafters.
Blanken, though.
Rafters.
Yes, Rafters.
Rafters was unbelievable. The old Riley Lake House, you know, one of the old casinos out by the lake. And Andy could help us with a lot of this. Nine Maple, and the one accessible from, you know, the behind. There were two ways. There was indoors and there was the outdoor scene.
Metro.
Now you're talking. Good job.
Yeah. It was a regular.
Good job.
There.
Yeah. Good
that
job.
That was. Yes. That was also very much a hot spot.
Well, I had plenty of time at Sperry's in the 80s and 90s, and the drinking in the back and outside. When
Matt Dillon's brother Kevin Dillon was kind of a regular at the track for a while, and he used to be at Metro at night. Oh, and the last a few weeks ago, speaking of Desperate Annie's, Owen Wilson was shooting his new movie in Desperate Annie's.
You know, I heard about the movie being filmed kind of late, and I guess the day before things wrapped, or when he went home. He came out to the Oklahoma and spent the day, spent the morning with Chad at his barn. And there's always, you know, there's seems like on a regular basis. But I didn't know about the movie being shot in town until it was pretty much over.
Yeah, I think Desperate Annie's was one of the first locations. And then you would hear stories of him popping up and being seen around town, either shooting or just, like you say, around town, taking advantage of the town itself. Somebody told me, and I have to have yet to have this confirmed, but somebody said Christopher Walken bought a place in Saratoga.
Really?
That's the rumor I have heard.
Interesting. Well, with that we'll keep an eye out for Walken. More cowbell. Certainly welcome in the spot. Speaking of which, we should mention more cream cheese, no jelly is coming.
I saw you hashtag that.
I did hashtag it. You saw that. That's funny. Yes. I did use that with my bagel post from the other morning. It's a classic. They should pull that out again. We are back. I say it because I just literally looked down minutes ago and I got one of those email alerts and Mike from OTB just sent me a note. So we're going to be doing a lot of stuff, actually, more than usual.
Yes, looking forward to it. Should be fun. You and I back in the usual Sunday morning slot, but then maybe a couple other things for you as well. So it should be fun. But looking forward. Loose on the lead, back again. And what last week I think you said since 1972. I thought that was probably close enough. There are people who are believing that.
Because no one knows. You know, there was the summer where I was suspended. That was the best. That where I had offended the Capital District by having the temerity of chiding Joe Bruno. I stepped on some politico toes and found myself benched for the summer. But then I was let out of the doghouse the next summer.
You're back. You're back with a vengeance.
That was pretty funny. Well, listen, it's amazing. How many years? When did you first show up on Capital OTB?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I'd have to go look that up. That's a very good question. 15, anyway, probably.
Wow. That's as long as I've been on. I've been doing the radio. In fact, you know, one thing I did not slip in, and because I didn't realize it until late Friday night, I was writing up the analysis for Saturday, and I don't know how I even came across it. Something on Facebook with the memories. Friday, June 4th, had been the day that in 2007. that my name was added to the marquee, as it happens. We became it became At the Races with Steve Pick on June 4th, 2007. So we, from that standpoint, the 14th anniversary and 16 years total. But it's hard to
now believe. Here you are, the man. The man, the legend.
I'm a man, not the man. That's a paraphrase from Groundhog Day. Bill Murray saying, Phil saying, I'm a god, not the god. That's one of my favorites. Well, Seth, I need your help. I don't know what you looked at, but Delaware. We should mention the Obeya. And
absolutely. I have a turn to the Obeya because I was going to hit on that, if you ask.
Let's go. And I'll tell people, rather than tell you who's scratched, let me tell you who's running. The 2, 3, the 8, the 10, 11, 12, and the 14. So 7 ended up coming out, but it's still a field of 7.
Okay, so go over those one more time.
Crystal Ball is in the 2. Bayesian Girl, the 3, is in the 8. Miss Marissa, Jimmy Ryerson, is in the 10. Dream Marie is in the 11. Market Rumor, Ian Wilkes, is in the 12. Graceful Princess with Luis Saez making a trip down to Stanton, and the 14, Artful Splatter. There's your field of 7.
Okay, so I lost some of mine. My top pick is in, though. I thought Crystal Ball was the one to go to. And if you go back and watch that last race down at Churchill, that was one of those races I liked, where the horse comes around the far turn, and Crystal Ball is kind of in the lead as they hit, you know, just as they get to the end of the turn, but then gets passed by Market Rumor, and really for, yeah, I don't know, 100, 200 yards, Market Rumor has the lead, and Crystal Ball comes back and lines up a chart margin of over a length. So I like that gutsy kind of comeback in the stretch. So I thought she was the one to beat. I had her on top, and then I'm just kind of personal with my scratches and whatnot. I guess then I wind up with Bayesian Girl, who I had down a little bit, but I lost a couple of scratches. But Bayesian Girl, I thought nice positional early speed, and coming out of the fourth in the LaTroye M behind She Dares the Devil and En Boutant, she was playable. And then Market Rumor, who I had down at the bottom of my mix originally, but moves up now, third start of the year, a couple of decent numbers to start the season. I think this one, again, with the third start kind of angle at work, is a player as well. So after the scratches, I'm now,
well,
what,
I got bad news.
11.
The two's Crystal Ball's now out too.
Oh, gee. Wow.
Yep.
Is there,
yep,
weather down there? What's with the scratches?
Well, you had, I think, at least 3 horses that ran over the weekend, for starters.
Right, right, yeah.
That contributed to it. And Luis Saez, with Crystal Ball out, Luis riding in place of Irad, who had been named on Graceful Princess. So Saez there, and Paco Lopez jumps aboard for Kendrick Carmouche on Bayesian Girl. So the 3, the 1, the 3, the 8, the 10, 11, 12, 14. That's your field. And I suppose Louis with that Graceful Princess.
Yeah, that horse is a player.
And Market Rumor's okay, though, too. Nothing wrong with Market Rumor.
Yep.
Even with the 7, it ends up being okay. And then, of course, we got the Indiana action as well. Seth, I appreciate it, and we'll talk next week as we hurtle toward Saratoga summer.
Sounds good. Good luck, everybody.
Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow 2 on your Twitter. Bill Downs, Bill Downs 1. DRF Pridman. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale with Sid Fernando. And we had some Pete Fornital, too, earlier, and Alan Foreman, who helped us through the legalese. Enjoy the afternoon. Plenty of good racing today. And we'll have a Thursday get-together. We got some This Is Horse Racing Saratoga special conversation. Clancy's and such, and more. Tony Black as well. And we got to get a few more of the, haven't talked to all the trainers I wanted to talk to. We got those two. And we'll look at the pick six in New York, carryover sequence, right? And probably some looking ahead to Woodbine's opener on Saturday. Thanks. Talk to you in the morning at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.